After almost any act of violence, be it a suicide or a mass school shooting, people ask questions. Most centrally, these questions. How could we have prevented this from happening? And how can we keep it from happening again? We talk now to someone who has spent a great deal of time examining those very questions. Dr. Malcolm Smith is Associate Extension Professor at the University of New Hampshire in Youth and Family Education Policy. He's a member of what's known as the National Crisis Response Team. He's examined the sites of numerous school shootings, including Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut. He joins me by phone. Dr. Smith, welcome to All Things Considered.
Thanks.
Where have we made the most progress in understanding both what to do during a shooting and hopefully how to prevent future shootings? And where do we still have questions that need further research and further investigation?
What we know about these situations is that there's two problems that always seem to be related in every single instance. And that is, first, that the student that we're dealing with had a very bad experience in society or school in recent years, that they feel alienated, isolated, and usually have been victims of peer victimization themselves and bullying. The second thing we know is these things never happen in a vacuum. There were always warning signs. The third thing that's right at the heart of the debate is this, that we know that access to weapons is one of the things that have drawn all of these shooters together.
And you don't need me to tell you that that is something of a controversial statement, to say that there are a number of people who would say that the issue is mental health, and you hear that throughout this debate.
Well, Brady, I did say that. These are people who've become so alienated and isolated and so victimized that they see violence as really the only way out. And one of the other things that you'll see that's really an indicator of this is that you'll see that there was an act of suicide or suicidal ideation in every act that they committed, that they knew or had carefully planned in their own life. One of the things I think we can look at in New Hampshire and that we should take a look at, and we really do need to do this nationally, is when we closed many of our state institutions, which many people agreed was a good idea, or reduced them, we perpetrated this myth that communities would rise up to take on the responsibility of caring for those who are isolated, alienated by mental illness. And, if you look around, that really hasn't happened. We have decimated our mental health systems in New Hampshire and around the country. And I know that in Governor Hassan's budget, that was a discussion, and recently that the National Alliance for Mental Illness here in the state have held several press conferences about the need and the waiting lists that we have, particularly for these young adults in our facilities throughout the state. Many of them, unfortunately, end up in jail. And if you talk to the jailers around the state, you'll get this answer. I was just talking to the one in Sullivan County, for example, who said, we know that 70 to 80% of the people who are in our jail are there because they need treatment for drug and alcohol, treatment for mental illness, and help with connections, finances, and being less isolated in the community.
Obviously, there's been a big change, as you said, in the recent decades in the way schools respond. I mean, schools practice lockdowns now, and they didn't used to do that. And I'm just curious if there has been any research done on the effect that that has on kids who are in school.
It definitely has, and I'm very familiar with that research. Not only does it make kids more fearful when they have to deal with, seeing all those sort of police state-like measures in their school, cameras and lockdowns and drills and those sorts of things, but it creates a sense of hopelessness. I think part of this whole trend that began in the 90s has to do with a growing compassion deficit among our young people. And the research is very clear about that. There have been several recent studies that have shown that the kids who are in school today have much less empathy, compassion, and caring for other people. I mean, that doesn't mean that there aren't wonderful kids out there. Of course there are. But overall, as a group, the current class of young people and some of the current college-age children that we're dealing with really lack in skills that are essential to living with civility.
How do you cope with seeing the aftermath of these tragedies?
I have to tell you, I came to UNH from Kansas, where I was running a consulting business that strictly worked with schools around this issue. And I came to UNH really to deal with some post-traumatic stress from dealing with all of these myself. And so over the years that I've been in UNH, what's been renewing and refreshing to me is that I've put together a team called the Courage to Care that is working on prevention. And so I'm seeing some hope where there was hopelessness.
Dr. Malcolm Smith, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Brady.